You're listening to the Housing Innovation Alliance podcast in partnership with the University of Denver's Franklin L. Burns School of Real Estate and Construction Management. The Housing Innovation Alliance is a nationwide community of game changers driving the future of home delivery through crowd-accelerated innovation. We represent thought leaders from dirt to dweller with a focus on the production builder's business environment.
Hi, this is Dennis Steigerwalt, president of the Housing Innovation Alliance, and you're listening to our podcast series. Today, I'm joined by Walker Harris and Jeff Williams, co-founders of Williams Robotics. How you doing today, guys?
Doing great. And thanks for having us, Dennis.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. I'm excited to share your story. You know, after having the opportunity to visit your facility and meet with your team down in the Carolinas, kind of get to see your technology in action, I think there's a lot that can be shared with our community, both from the experience that you've gone through in developing the solution set that Williams Robotics is coming up with, but then also share with us how you've come about getting to know each other and deciding to tackle innovation in the space. So let's start there. Tell us a little bit about yourselves and how you guys joined up to take on innovation, because I think you're really a unique but perfect pair for this task.
Yeah, I agree. Thanks, Dennis. So my background is in the construction side. So in high school and even in college, I worked construction, just have a little beer money to throw around, and then, you know, but didn't figure that I went to college to work in construction. So after college, I went into the financial world for a little while and just quickly realized that I had a yearning to get back into the construction. So I did that after 2 years working in the financial section. And, you know, here I am sort of 28 years later, been absolutely loving everything to do with the development and construction, you know, company that I have. And I've loved the big picture, but I haven't loved all the labor pains that we've had to deal with throughout that. But that's a different topic for later. And you know, in my years of building, I ran across, you know, some friends that were co-founders with Jeff in another venture, and they had an exit from that company, and Jeff was ready to tackle another problem. And, you know, I guess before, he didn't know that much about construction, and his co-founders put him, you know, they said, hey, before you kind of go down the wrong path, we want you to connect with our friend Walker and just see what he thinks about your technology and your idea. And I was, as soon as I met him, I was just blown away at what, you know, his concept was. So I'll let Jeff kind of run back through his background and his perspective on how we met.
Yeah. Thanks, Walker, for those kind words, too. I appreciate that. I'm an engineer by training and really have spent my entire career in research and development. 10 years at NASA doing really basic research on satellites that orbit the Earth. And towards the end of that, I made the logical transition into pharmacy automation and spent about 20 years there doing, you know, some really innovative stuff. The first robots to dispense prescriptions, and then some ongoing developments of those into, I think our first machine was 11 feet by 40 feet. And our kind of our crowning achievement was the more functionality in a 2 foot by 6 foot footprint. You know, kind of worked through that industry, had some great successes, and decided to make the next logical transition into construction, building houses. Was really just looking around, watching houses being built. You know, a bunch of guys running over all over a bunch of 2x4s, and thought, gee, we've been doing that the same way for 200 years. Maybe we can get robots to do that. So started looking at it and got hooked up with Walker, and here we are today.
All right. Exciting. So when someone says it's, you know, this is truly taking rocket science, moving into pharma, and then applying kind of all those lessons learned into an industry that's really been behind the eight ball when it comes to innovation for a number of years. So I think this is you know, a great journey that you can take us on from your personal experiences. So tell me a little bit about what you've seen from the perspective of innovation in other industries, kind of what forced them to innovate, and how that makes you think about innovation in the construction industry.
You know, the other industries, you have to be specific to the industries, but kind of what was their tipping point or breaking point that just said, okay, we've had enough, we've got to do something different. And I think there are different reasons behind it. Maybe it was they weren't able to meet the supply demands with their current setup, or labor was too expensive, or there were too many restrictions around it. Like, you know, if you think about the unions and their influence over the auto industry, that probably had a lot to do with why they switched over to automation and robotics and innovation. Certainly, you know, quality comes into play as, you know, hey, we just can't achieve the level of quality with humans so we have to find a different way to do it. And maybe Jeff can speak more to this from his pharmacy automation days, but also liability. You know, I got to believe that human error from a pharmacist is probably a big liability, and the pharmacy robot, you know, sort of eliminates that. So that those would be my sort of examples or breaking points as to why other industries finally, you know, decided to take the leap. Jeff, you probably have some other thoughts to add to that.
Yeah, sure, Walker. It's all those things. It's to be able to do the work consistently, do more of it with fewer people, you know, so there's a productivity and quality impacts of automation. And you see that generally. And I think we can bring those benefits to the world of construction.
All right. So, you know, I kind of referenced earlier that, you know, the construction industry has been slow to adopt some of these new technologies. It's been decreasing in productivity by some measures. So what I'm wondering is, what is your take on why has there been a lack of innovation in the construction space?
Yeah, that's, you know, it's a good question, and you can't point to one thing and say, oh, that's the reason. But, you know, I guess I can think of a few things. So the one of the bigger ones is, as builders, you know, we've all heard about the latest and greatest, you know, materials that are coming, you know, through the pipeline, and we got to use this material. And there's been some pretty big, you know, drop off in liability issues there. So some I can think of are synthetic stucco. You know, we went crazy using synthetic stucco in the 90s, only to find out later that it had a lot of moisture issues into the houses. Same thing with the polybutylene piping, with the plumbing, and on and on. So we've, as a, you know, industry, we've been burned a lot by materials that cost us a lot of money to sort of get out of that. I think another reason is that our highs and lows, sort of the cyclical nature of our business, are so high when they're high and they're so low when they're low, and it happens pretty quickly. The shift does. So it's kind of like when we're at the top of the mountain and we're wondering how are we going to get all this stuff built. We don't really have time to think about innovation. And then at the other extreme, when it happens quickly and we're at the bottom and we have plenty of time, but we're scared about the future, or maybe we're scared about our cash flow. You know, we just hunker down and we don't innovate at that point. You know, I've been in this business for 28 years or so. And I'd say in the beginning third of my career, there was pretty abundant labor out there. So we could always just, you know, we always said we just throw more tool belts at the problem. We would just hire more people, bring more people on, and kind of keep up with the pace then. And that worked 20 years ago, but now it doesn't seem to be a viable solution. And then if you fast forward and look in the future, I think that situation is only going to get worse. So, you know, and I feel like we're kind of, as an industry, a little bit asleep at the wheel, where we think there's this wave of reliable labor just going to come riding over the hill, ready to kick ass and take names. And it's just not going to happen. So it's time that we accept that and sort of control our own destiny and start, you know, moving down the research and development path into some innovation that will make a, you know, impact on our industry. Jeff, you have anything to add to that?
Yeah. I think, you know, the construction industry is really interesting from the standpoint that the people doing it are really good at converting cheap land into expensive land, you know, by putting a house on it. And the day-to-day pressures of that are something that they deal with well and are measured and rewarded for doing that well. And so when you start talking about R&D, frankly, you're talking about a whole different mindset. It's sort of a mysterious world of, you know, well, how did that iPhone happen? You know, just one day it wasn't there, and the next day I could buy it. Well, you know, you didn't see the 10 years of research and development that went into it. And that mystery, I think, perhaps is, you know, something that's uncomfortable for the folks that live construction day to day.
Yeah. So you both kind of alluded to something I want to talk about a little further. So there's this concept around research and development for the industry. And Jeff, you have a background that, you know, with aeronautics and pharmaceuticals, you know, that was part of the game, right? Day in and day out. So what does R&D mean to Williams Robotics as an organization? And what do you think it needs to mean for our industry?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and take that one. You know, so we use the term R&D, you know, everybody's heard it. I think maybe it's best to look at it as R then D. So you do this research, and typically that's to uncover some basic fact. You know, is the earth round? And then you go further and do the development. And this is the uncertain as the research. It's how do you take that fact and do something worthwhile with it, circumnavigating the world? It's sort of a piecewise process that you move through the steps as they let you move through. The development part is perhaps the hardest and most frustrating, but it's also the most important because that's when you get to the real world of achieving the goal that you wanted to achieve.
Yeah, in my perspective, I'll add, kind of like Jeff, you talked as a reference, the iPhone, you know, it took 10 years or however long it took. And I also, you know, in our industry where we deal with wood and not perfect materials, I will say it's going to be hard. It's going to take a lot longer than we think. And so we really need to get going on it. That would be my parting words on the R&D is, you know, it's going to be harder than we think, take longer than we think. So we better get going because the labor's just not there and it's not coming back. So we've got to do something different.
Yeah. All right. I want to build on that for a minute because, you know, you said something earlier on, you know, part of the reason for the lack of innovation in the space is because of the way it's organized and it's because of the risk profile and the risk reward ratio just hasn't been there in the past for organizations that are building homes. Recently, we had George Casey on one of our market engagement activities, which we call Coffee Talks. And he talked about some of the cultural and structural changes that have to take place within organizations to enable or empower innovation. You know, it was kind of along the lines of until innovation becomes important to the CEOs and the upper management and is mandated by boards, it's just not going to succeed. So I wonder if you have, do you have any thoughts on from your conversations with your peers and with other leaders in the industry about where we're at with this and what kind of progress we're making?
Yeah, and I remember when George said that, and it really resonated with me. I think he's exactly right. Until it becomes important from top down, you know, I do think it's just going to kind of be a nice thing to talk about. But will there be the proper amount of allocation of resources and success? So I think he's absolutely right. One of the facts is the housing demand, you know, will continue to rise in our country, and that's even before COVID. I actually, you know, just personally think that post COVID, we'll see a higher demand for housing, but yet the ability to deliver that demand is decreasing. So that gap is just growing every day, every month, every year. And until personally think that innovation is going to help us not get rid of the gap, but at least close the gap some. So I think he's absolutely right.
Yeah. And, you know, to the culture that the CEO is responsible for, I think that's just essential that he or she can convince the people that are actually doing the research and development that it's okay to fail, that it's not going to be measured by a calendar. It's a long-term view. You have to be comfortable that your job is safe, that, you know, you're not trying to promise an exact result by a certain time. Failure is okay, actually okay to the point of being necessary. And it's really up to the CEO to create a culture where research and development can succeed.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I think that, you know, for our audience listening out there, do you have any thoughts on some first steps or some incremental steps we can start to take towards heading in the right direction here?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I feel like, you know, a lot of the big companies, the big players in our industry, you know, they are allocating a lot of their capital and resources to the next piece of raw land, the next development. That's what feeds the machine. I understand that. But I also feel like that some of those resources could be allocated towards innovation. Now, I'm not by any means saying all, but just, you know, rather than, you know, writing off $20 million this year in bad land deals, allocate some of that towards some innovation.
Yeah, and ask the right questions. Get the right people behind it. Don't punish missing a schedule or performing like your land development guy. You know, have some sense of urgency, but you know, be doing the right things. Try to head down in the right direction with the right people.
Yeah, so it sounds like, you know, many of these organizations are set up to efficiently manage projects, right? And if we look at innovation as another project, it just has to be that we change the paradigm on how we're measuring our success. So operationally, we can do this. It's just a matter of making sure that we're bought in throughout the organization and that we understand the way in which we need to kind of track progress and then ultimately monetize the outcomes. We've talked a bit about Williams Robotics and you know, your view on innovation, but I think it'd be great to share specifically, what is it you guys are doing and how are you going to change the industry?
Yeah. So, you know, our main sort of target is to work in an offsite construction plant at first, because we feel like that'll be a, you know, a safer place to sort of, you know, get really good at working with the imperfect materials of wood. So we have a prototype that is a wall panel robot. So basically it's a robot operated by one person that builds walls. Now, again, it's still in prototype phase. It's got tweaks that we'll learn about once we get it out into a plant. So that's our primary thing. And then beyond that, you know, we feel like there's some runway in floor trusses and roof trusses and really anything sort of semi-repetitive that's a construction task, we feel like we can tackle with automation and robotics.
Yeah, we, you know, to put it at a very high level, we take that BIM information and convert it into a format that the robot can understand. And then we further have the ability to control the robot in a way that it's effectively behaving with the dexterity and judgment and skill that a carpenter would normally use to build the house. So we try to take the carpenter or the materials and the plans that the carpenter uses and build the house as much like he would build it as possible with the robot.
All right. Well, it sounds like a very interesting application of your combined experience and skill sets. So with this, you must have your own ideas on what the industry is going to look like, you know, 5, 10, 15 years out from now. So I'd love to get your perspective as a team. What does your ideal construction industry look like in 10 years?
Yeah. So, I mean, I love thinking about that. I could talk about this all day long. So I guess I feel like we're heading into a whole lot more of off-site construction versus on-site. I've seen the progression. When I started this 28 years ago, there was hardly anything done off-site, and I've just seen it shift significantly. And I think that will happen much more so in the next 5, 10, 15 years. And I also think there still will be people involved, but I feel like there will be a lot more of the automation and robotics. Yeah. I feel like right now as builders and as an industry, we feel like, you know, we have to all be able to say yes to everything. Like, you know, do you want a hot tub on your roof? Yes, we can do that. You know, I feel like that mentality is probably going to go away, more like the auto industry, where it's, you know, not as many options, which I think would be good for our industry. You know, I think it's okay to say no, you know, sometimes. And then also just from a buyer's perspective, I feel like I think we've seen some of this in this COVID situation that we're living in now, where there's going to be a lot more sort of virtual shopping for homes and less model houses and on-site selling. So that'll be interesting to see how that impacts our industry. And I'm sure Jeff has some thoughts on that. Those are just sort of a few things that come to my mind.
Yeah, I agree with that, sort of that 10-year outlook that modular and off-site in general have our interim step that we're definitely going to move towards. But I like thinking about it in a much longer viewpoint, the 20 to 25 years out, you know, about the time I'm going to retire. You know, frankly, I know this will sound crazy, but what it looks like to me is a big machine that drives up to the home site. The operator loads it with material and the plans, and machine unfolds. He mashes the go button, grabs a cup of coffee, and a house is built. I truly believe that bizarre thing could happen in 25 years.
Very cool. And it sounds like, based off what you're doing with the Williams Robotics team, you guys will be front and center when that all takes place. So we'll be excited to see how that unfolds. Now, I know that as you go through the prototyping and introducing this solution that you're developing to members of our organization and other players in the industry, you're obviously going to run into some obstacles. I'm wondering, what can kind of the call to action be to our community to help this along and other solutions like it?
You know, take the first step and do it in a cordial, collaborative way. As you know, I think one of the things that Housing Alliance does really well is just really bring the community together in a friendly, productive manner. And, you know, to continue that, keep the conversations going. But also, as Walker said, it's not free. Some people are going to, you know, have to do things that feel like risk. If we don't take that first step, we're not going to get there. That not starting guarantees failure.
it kind of reminds me of my very first day when I was in high school, when I was working on a construction site. They just threw me in on a framing crew. And back then there were 16 people on a framing crew and I didn't know anything. And the lead carpenter, a guy named Mike Carr, just came by, yelled a bunch of stuff for us to do, went on to another job. And then he came back and he was just furious with me because he just jumped out of the truck and he could kind of tell I was just sort of timid and frozen and didn't want to mess anything up, didn't want to do anything. So I just decided to do nothing, you know, which I'm not proud of, but that's the way it was. And he just was yelling, do something, even if it's wrong, you know. And that was day one for me on construction. 28 years later, I think that's exactly what we need to be doing now. We got to do something, even if it's wrong. It probably will be wrong. Wherever we start and think we're heading, we won't probably end up where we think we will, but we've got to start. Do something, even if it's wrong. I say that to people all the time now. And it's okay to make a mistake. And then also to what Jeff was talking about earlier about, what Dennis, what you guys are doing with the Housing Innovation Alliance, you probably don't realize how important it is. But, you know, our industry is so sort of siloed. We don't want to share what we're up to or what we're thinking with anybody else. And we just, you know, there's just hundreds and thousands of silos of knowledge. And you guys are doing a really good job of sort of breaking those barriers down and forcing us kind of out of our comfort zone a little bit to have conversations with competitors and collaborate with you know, suppliers and competitors to just start having these productive conversations about, you know, the what if or where we're headed and things that we have to do as an industry to stay relevant and profitable.
Yeah, well, no, and I thank you for the kind words from both of you about our organization. That's certainly what we aim to do. It's, you know, it's about how do we keep cross connecting and cross pollinating not only with our organization but everyone across the value chain, right? I mean, that's the really, really important piece here, and looking for a common interest, look beyond our what's good for us and our companies, and what's going to work for the greater good. That's incredibly important. I think, you know, just touching on something you mentioned there, Walker. You know, we as a community kind of refer to your concept as you know, that what your site supervisor shared with you. You know, that idea of the fail forward, right? You know, you'll make mistakes. They're lessons that are earned, and you work with them and build off it. You know, I had a similar experience in one of my earlier positions where someone said to me, I'd much rather grab you by the tail than kick you in the backside. And that stuck with me, right? And I think we need to continue to see more of that in the next generation of leadership that's coming through the industry. And that's something that we look to help kind of promote and propagate as well. As we bring new community members in. So I think that you're right on. We have to be willing to take measured risk and look across the ecosystem to see how we can work with one another to create better partnering and better delivery models. No, I think this has been a great introduction to get to know the two of you as innovators and the thought leaders behind Williams Robotics. Any parting words for our community?
Just for me, just keep getting out of your comfort zone, keep pressing the conversation towards got to do things differently. We have to innovate to stay relevant.
Yeah, let's go make some cool robots.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Walker. Really appreciate the time today and look forward to connecting again in the near future.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks a lot, Dennis. Appreciate it. Take care.
On behalf of the Housing Innovation Alliance and the University of Denver, this is Dr. Eric Holt. Thank you for being part of our journey. This is where innovation calls home.